Welcome to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues, a weekly program discussing issues of concern to the family and those who hold traditional family values in Pennsylvania and our nation. Archives of these programs can be heard at www.afafpa.org. And now, your host, Diane Gramley, State Director of American Family Association of Pennsylvania.
Imagine these scenarios. The court rules that Christians with traditional ethical views of sexuality are not suitable to serve as foster or adoptive parents. The judges held that Christian beliefs regarding homosexuality are harmful to children and violate a child's international human rights. This happened in the UK in February. The day after this outrageous ruling in England, our own Supreme Court heard arguments in a case touching on parental and child rights. Camretta v. Green, which deals with whether or not a minor child has the right to be protected from seizure and interrogation by government officials without a warrant, emergency circumstances, or parental consent. UN Convention on the Rights of the Child were to be passed. If that treaty were to be passed, parents would be jailed for spanking their children. They would have no say as to whether their child could attend church or the child would have the total say in how they were brought up. So what we have is a situation where this treaty is before our Senate, means it's being held back by the Senate, and we're at a critical stage right now to where we're going to hopefully stop this for a while. And things can happen, as have happened in the UK and around the world. Things can happen in the US also if this treaty is ratified. So what we have is all the players in place in the United States Senate and Washington, D.C. and the United Nations who want to see this treaty ratified, and we need to take steps to prevent it. And there are steps that we can take now to prevent this redefinition of a parent's role in their child's upbringing. And to help us understand this, our guest today is Dr. Michael Ferris. He's with the Homeschool Legal Defense Association and parentalrights.org. Thanks, Dr. Ferris, for being with us.
It's my pleasure to be with you.
So, you know, I outlined a few of the scenarios that could be possible under the Convention on the Rights of the Child. Explain to begin with what that is as a whole before we get into the exciting steps that are being taken.
This convention is a United Nations treaty, and if it's adopted, if it's ratified by the United States Senate, it becomes part of the highest law of the land under our Constitution. And the Constitution in Article 6 expressly says anything in any treaty that is contradicted by state law or state constitutions, the treaty prevails over state law. And in the United States, the vast majority, nearly all laws relative to parents and children are state laws. And so state laws say you can spank your kids, the treaty says you can't. State laws say you get to choose where your kids go to church or where they go to school, how you discipline them, how you give them medical care. All of that would be overridden by the treaty, and the treaty would be supreme. So the basic rule that parents are decision makers for their kids at all stages of their childhood would be replaced by the idea that the government gets to oversee parents and make decisions for children when the government thinks that a better decision can be made than the one that the parent made. Today, that can happen only if there is a proof or there is adequate proof that the parents are abusing their kids or neglecting their kids. But this treaty takes away any need to prove anything.
They basically turn everything upside down.
That's right. They do basically, the government is presumptively entitled to intervene and second-guess parents on everything.
On every single thing, every aspect of their upbringing.
Right.
And I know Canada, I think Canada recently outlawed corporal punishment, spanking. And that they've signed on to the treaty, right?
Right. Every nation in the world except the United States and Somalia has signed on to the treaty. Most of them, like all the Islamic nations, have reservations that say, yeah, well, we signed the treaty, but Sharia law controls. Mm-hmm. And so most nations, sign it, ratify it, but don't really care. The United States is one of the few nations that cares. Canada cares to a great degree. Britain's legal system is different. They only make political promises, but when they sign treaties, not legal promises like we do. And so it varies from nation to nation, the impact, but the political pressure would be enormous, even in England, to come in line with the treaty's requirements.
I'm thinking about the various stories I've heard from around the country where parental rights have been taken away in homeschool cases or whatever. And there's a definite impact. And here in the U.S., I know, what was it, Bill Clinton actually said he'd sign on to the treaty or something?
He did. He had Madeleine Albright, who was the ambassador to the United Nations. And under international law, she was authorized to sign it under the direction of the president for the United States. So the United States is actually a signatory. But a signatory really doesn't make you a party to the treaty. And that's the real key, is when are you a party to the treaty? And you're a party under our law when the Senate ratifies it. And that has not happened.
Okay, so it has been signed by a president, but it has not been ratified. In fact, if I remember correctly, there was such an uproar, what was it, back in 95 or 96 when Clinton signed it?
Right.
And the Senate was poised at that point to ratify, but there was such an uproar that they backed off.
That's exactly right. Senator Helms led the charge in those days. Homeschool Legal Defense was helping to lead the grassroots lobbying effort even then. And we had other friends helping as well, but we kind of have been taking the lead on this treaty for a long time. Others are taking leads on other treaties, and we're helping them. But so there's a coalition effort in Washington to protect our sovereignty. But there's kind of a lead group on each of these treaties trying to stop them.
That pretty much is what it boils down to: is we are bowing to the, if this is ratified, we're bowing to the whims of the United Nations.
That's exactly right. Sovereignty in this context simply means this: Americans make the law for America. And if we have U.S. senators who feel like they're incapable of doing their job as senators and making American laws to protect American kids, and don't think that state legislators are capable of making American laws to protect American kids, and think that instead that we need 18 bureaucrats in Geneva to be able to make our public policy on this subject called the Committee on the Rights of the Child, they ought to do the honorable thing and resign their offices and give the positions over to people who feel up to the task of making American laws for American kids.
So there are 18 individuals who compose this commission or committee.
Committee on the Rights of the Child. One of them, for example, is from Uganda. Uganda, in the last 24 months, their national press reported that the Uganda legislature was considering banning honor killings.
Considering it.
Now, the wolves are guarding the chicken. Actually, the foxes are guarding the chicken houses. And we're supposed to let these people tell America how we're going to raise our families? I mean, it's just upside down, backwards, and crazy.
Absolutely. I know there's been the effort to get parental rights amendment to the United States Constitution, which takes a long time to even be able to get it to the states, where I think is, what, two-thirds?
Right. We have to have two-thirds of both houses of Congress to be able to get it to the state legislatures, and then 38 state legislatures have to vote to ratify. But the parental rights amendment, what it will do is stop two trends. One, Section 3 explicitly bans the use of international law in this area. Treaties can't be made, they can't be used, you can't use this to interpret our existing law. It just draws an absolute prohibition against using international law in this context. The other sections prevent the judicial erosion that's happening in this country that's turning parental rights into really a non-right. The vast majority of federal court cases decided in the last decade treat parents' rights as a non-fundamental right, and that distinction is very crucial. A fundamental right is one where you are presumed to be in the right and the government has a very heavy burden to overcome it. And a non-fundamental right, the government's presumed to have all the power it needs and you have all the duty to overcome it. And so when the courts are treating, especially the federal courts, are treating parental rights as a non-fundamental right, it's almost the same as saying it's not a right at all. Mm-hmm. And we see erosions happening in America already. For example, a doctor in Tennessee took a dad aside, this is about 18 months ago. The 13-year-old boy was brought to the doctor, and the doctor suspected he was using illegal drugs, and he asked the dad if he could test him, and the dad said, okay. When the test results came back, the doctor said, because of federal HIPAA laws, I cannot give you, the dad, the results of this drug test. Because
a minor child.
Yeah, because there is no recognized parental rights in Tennessee. And what we need is a constitutional law, just as the Second Amendment has proven itself to be very important to protect the rights of gun owners.
Absolutely.
We need to have the Parental Rights Amendment saying, government, you just stay out of our families. If you've got proof that we're doing something wrong, if you've got proof, then that's a different story. But until you've got the evidence to show that we're abusing or neglecting our kids, we get the medical result.
Yeah.
We get to make the decisions about church sins. We get to decide a lot of things. For example, another very clear thing from the treaty is if you had a 16-year-old daughter that decided to post a picture of herself in a bikini on Facebook, Any dad worth his salt is going to say, you can't do that. You take that down. But under the Convention on the Rights of the Child, no limitation can be put on a child's communication except for those required by law, and then the law has to pass a higher standard of scrutiny. But we don't even get to that issue in this context because there is no law. There is no law that says that a 16-year-old girl can't put a picture of herself in a bikini on Facebook.
Right, there's just warnings in there. Right.
I mean, common sense says you don't do that. Yeah. A good dad says you don't do that. Mm-hmm. But that good dad would be barred by the Convention on the Rights of the Child from protecting his daughter under those kind of circumstances because it's a child's right of communication.
And historically, up to maybe 50 years ago, courts, at least I think they did, the courts pretty much stayed out of the, except in cases where there's child abuse or such, they did in fact stay out of cases between parents and child. They let the parents raise their own children until there was, or unless there was some type of evidence that there was abuse going on or neglect. Hasn't that historically been the case in the U.S.?
It has, but the change isn't just the court system, because constitutional challenges arise when there's a law that authorizes the government to take some action and invades the home. So it's really activist congresses and activist state legislatures that have changed the situation where they're putting government controls, government regimes in place that give government officials purported authority to second-guess parents. And so, you know, we can't blame this all on the courts. It's partly the legislatures.
Again, showing how important it is to get the right people in office.
Absolutely.
And
if the right people were in office, then they also provide an additional check and balance on the courts.
Yeah, because I was thinking it was mostly as a result of judicial court decisions, but that's not the case then, you're saying.
No, it's not even primarily the case. I think primarily it's the case of activist legislators who feel like, you know, every time something happens to somebody in the country, we've got to have a new law for it.
Yeah.
And so,
that's for everything.
Yeah, that's for everything, and including this area.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't realize that. So I guess you can't blame it all on the judges.
No, you can't.
So, you know, and again, President Obama has expressed interest, shall we say, in passing this, and some senators also have expressed interest in passing this.
Right, it's more than interest. He's committed to it, and at least some of the senators, I mean, Barbara Boxer has promised publicly that she would get it ratified. You know, she's going to find it very difficult to get that done. Of course, Hillary Clinton, when she was the first lady, was the one who made the press announcement that the United States was signing this treaty, and she celebrated it as a big thing. And so now she basically has the treaty in her shop.
Yeah.
And when the State Department sends it to the Senate, that's when official action can be taken. But it's officially sitting in the State Department.
So
Hillary Clinton and Harold Coe, who's their chief lawyer, who's an internationalist of a very aggressive form.
Looks international law.
Yeah, well, he believes that international law should control the domestic law of the United States. And that's the way that lawyers are being trained. When Elena Kagan was the dean of Harvard Law School, she changed the requirements
for the curriculum. Current Supreme Court Justice Elena Kagan.
Yeah. Exactly, that's what I mean. She led a curricular change. A constitutional law is no longer a required class at Harvard. International law is a required class. And when she was asked why they were putting international law in the first year, she said, well, I want it to be used so that people have learned how to think about the law. In other words, so that they see all law through the lens of international law.
Mm-hmm.
So if they happen to ever think about the Constitution or study the Constitution as an elective, then they're going to learn to think about the Constitution of the United States through the lens of international law. And so it's a very, very dangerous thing.
Yeah. And as I said, the players are in place in Washington, from the White House to the State Department to even one of the at least one of the United States Supreme Court justices, Elena Kagan, to get this terrible treaty ratified. But again, you've been working with the Parental Rights Amendment, trying to get that passed. But there's some exciting news, though, as far as what happened on the 10th, I believe it was 10th of March, Senator DeMint.
Right. He introduced Senate Resolution 99, which puts people on record opposing the treaty. And we currently have 31 U.S. senators who have signed up as co-sponsors. And when there's 34, that's enough votes to block the treaty.
So we need three more.
There should be more. We're just one week into the process, and we have 31. And we're very hopeful we're going to get to 34 soon.
Oh,
but we need people to call their U.S. senators. First, go to the parentalrights.org website. See if your senator is currently a co-sponsor. And if he is, then send him a written note thanking him or her. But if they're not a co-sponsor, then you need to call your senator and say, you need to be a co-sponsor of Senate Resolution 99.
Yeah, I would encourage folks to go to parentalrights.org also just for some additional scenarios of what can happen if this passes and the full ramifications. I know you have 10 things you need to know about the structure of the Convention on the Rights of the Child, and goes into detail about it being a treaty and how it affects American families. Yeah, I just encourage folks to do that, to get a handle on this very real danger to our American families. It's a very, very dangerous concept that we would give up our rights as parents to the United Nations, because that's exactly what we would be doing and what the senators who ratified this would be giving their stamp of approval for the UN to raise our children. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And there would be another transfer of power as well, because under international law, the body that ratifies a treaty is the body responsible to implement the treaty. So Congress ratifies the treaty. That means Congress is responsible to pass all the laws that are necessary to implement the treaty, which means all jurisdiction over family issues would be transferred from the states to the Congress under the supervision of the UN. So we go from state law sovereignty to a mixed bag of federal and international sovereignty, and the states are just out of the picture altogether.
So,
right.
So we would be ceding our responsibilities to the. Okay, let me understand this. If the treaty is ratified,
right.
if the Senate ratifies the convention, UN Convention on the Rights of the Child, then the United States Congress would write all the laws to implement the
right.
treaty.
Right. Under international law, a nation ratifies a treaty. Under our law, too, a nation ratifies the treaty. And under our necessary and proper clause, Congress has the power to implement any laws that are necessary and proper to carry out its duties under the Constitution. And Congress clearly has the duty, once it ratifies
right.
the treaty,
mm-hmm.
to implement the treaty.
Mm-hmm.
And so because of that, the necessary and proper clause and the treaty power combined give Congress complete authority to legislate on everything concerning children, which today they don't have, but they have to do it under the UN supervision. So it's going from 100% the state responsibility, which it is today, to a mixed system where it's Congress and the UN that have jurisdiction over families and kids in America. Both of those decisions are bad. It's especially bad for the UN to be involved, but it's almost as bad for Congress to take over this area of jurisdiction.
Yeah.
Congress has got its hands full already trying to do the things the Constitution
actually
requires it to
right,
do.
Right.
And they need to stay with the idea of doing the things that are necessary to pass laws on immigration and other things that are truly federal issues, and keep their noses out of things that are truly state issues.
You know, the UN comes up with what appears to be good ideas. You know, you think of the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child, and supposedly it was put in place, or it's been created, to protect children. But when I go on the UN website and I see some of the stuff that they advocate for children, you know, dealing with abortion, dealing with homosexuality, dealing with sex before marriage. And they are, if this is ratified, they would have the authority to, quote unquote, help our Congress write the laws dealing with our children and what they, you know, with homosexuality, how they interpret homosexuality. And I mean, that's just very frightening, just the concept of the UN.
Right. Well,
control.
I mean, the reason it should be frightening is because we're giving up the very reason America was founded. We didn't want the Parliament in London telling us what our laws would be. And why we would give that principle up voluntarily and let 18 experts in Geneva decide what our laws are going to be baffles me. Why are we forfeiting the Declaration of Independence?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And especially because the UN has no track record of actually protecting children.
No.
Ask yourself, you know, this treaty's been in place in most nations for 20 years. Is sex trafficking any better? No, it's worse.
It's worse.
Is child porn any better? No, it's worse. The fact of the matter is,
and the promotion of homosexuality is worse.
Yeah, and porn's worse.
Yeah.
Abortions are worse.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that this treaty should,
supposedly,
you know, if you actually were interested in protecting children, this doesn't work.
No, it doesn't.
And
the further you get, when you create a distance, shall we say, or a space between parent and child, where the government steps in between the parent and child, there is no way it's going to get any better.
That's exactly right. I was involved in the very end of this particular case. The family came to see me when it was really too late to appeal to the Supreme Court. This is a case that came out of the Washington State Supreme Court where a 13-year-old girl was taken from her parents because they grounded her after finding out that she was sexually active and was smoking marijuana.
13.
And the state of Washington took her away and put her in foster care to protect the child's wishes on these issues. That girl, when she was grown up and had a daughter of her own, testified in a hearing that I organized in the United States Senate on parents' rights. She said, "What the state of Washington should have done for me is tell me to go home and obey my parents."
Mm-hmm.
And that's the best advice that we can give to any child for any set of parents, unless they're abusive.
Right.
And if abuse or neglect, and that's
situation.
Proven, different story.
Right.
But for good parents, for vast majority of American
exactly.
parents,
yeah.
you tell, you know, even if you would second-guess that child's the parent's decision on something, then, you can make a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
The life lesson that child needs is obeying your parents is a really good idea, because even if you miss a decision now and again, you're going to get the vast majority of them right.
Exactly.
And that child needs to have confidence that they're in the loving arms of somebody who really cares
yeah,
about
yeah.
them.
Now, Senator DeMint's, Senate Resolution 99,
yes.
exactly what does that do?
Well, it's really a political statement. It just simply puts people on record saying that they're going to stop the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child. And so when you get 34 of them, it's like a two-year-long barrier against
okay.
the treaty. Once there's a new set of Senate elections, then you start over.
Okay.
And so the only permanent protection to stop all this is the Parental Rights Amendment.
Okay, so Senator DeMint's effort, Senate Resolution 99, is like a stopgap.
That's exactly right.
To get passed or get to the end of the Obama term.
Right, basically. And it's very important, and I'm really glad he's doing it. I mean, I helped draft it, so I'm obviously on board with the idea.
Mm-hmm.
And, there are some problems. You need a short-term solution, and you need a long-term solution.
Right.
And this is one of those.
Exactly. Sometimes you have to throw up a short-term solution just to give you a little bit of breathing room to get that long-term solution in place.
Right.
But I know I checked the list of senators who've signed on, and at this time, neither Senator Casey nor Senator Toomey had signed on, but I know there was a note besides Senators Toomey's name that he was definitely very interested in Senate Resolution 99, so I'm hoping he will go beyond being interested and actually sign on to it.
Right. I think that Senator Toomey would just need a little nudging, and he'll be on board.
Okay.
Well, Senator Casey, that's a whole different story.
That's a whole different story. And that's such a sad story when you look at his dad and compare his dad to him, and they aren't the same
right.
at all. But I'm going to go ahead and give Senator Casey's and Toomey's numbers out. Maybe that little
yeah,
that
we should. I mean, there's no reason that... I mean, Senator Casey needs to explain to the voters of Pennsylvania why he feels incompetent to make American laws to protect American kids.
Yeah.
If he's thinking about this treaty being a good idea, that's the question he has to answer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Senator Casey's number in Washington is 202-224-6324. That's 202-224-6324. And Senator Toomey's number in Washington is 202-224-4254. That's 202-224-4254. And again, call them and ask them to step up for the children in not only Pennsylvania but the nation and sign on to Senator DeMint's Senate Resolution 99. They also need to sign on to the amendment too, because neither one of them has signed on to the Parental Rights Amendment. So they need to do that, because this is too crucial. We cannot allow the United Nations to take away the rights of parents in this country to raise their children as they see fit. I appreciate the effort that you, Dr. Ferris, and all you guys out there at Parental Rights has. I know you've been working feverishly to get this amendment passed. And I appreciate
Thank you for
effort.
That, and thank you for helping us get the word out.
Well, we're going to do all that we can, and I also encourage folks to get a copy of your DVD, The Child.
Great.
To show that, because that also helps to explain the situation of what can happen in this country if that treaty is ratified. So, again, thanks a lot. And,
thank you.
Folks can contact you, through the website?
Right.
Okay, parentalrights.org.
Right.
And I encourage folks to do that. You take care.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues. If you would like to get involved in defending traditional values in Pennsylvania, please contact the AFAFPA at Post Office Box 1048, Franklin, 16323, or visit their website at afafpa.org. The views expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect the views of American Family Radio, Lighthouse Ministries of Franklin, AFA, and AFA of PA.